Welcome, Potters and non-Potters, or should I say future Potters, to episode 113 of CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. And this episode, we are also the podcast for all things panels.
Okay.
Come on. You gotta get excited. This is something we know a lot about.
I'm sorry. I'm still just giggling at the fact that you said that I'm gold and you're silver. It made me think of the movie Music and Lyrics.
Well, you know, silver and gold. Silver and gold.
Yeah, you know.
I love Cornelius.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so there we go. I'm excited now. Yay, we get to talk about panels.
Yes, this episode we are going to focus on how to properly run a panel according to Amber and Val. This is not the end-all be-all. Obviously, this is our opinions, but we do have a lot of experience doing this at multiple conventions around the country, and we've been doing this for several years. And we've done it before audiences, you know, as small as 5 people, all the way up to 200 people.
Or maybe 1,000 in my case.
Anyway, so we've been experienced at this for a little while.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We wanted to offer you guys some advice after where the panels were not as efficient as they could be. I don't want to bash the panelists because they may genuinely not know better. So we're going to offer those of you who are preparing for panels, say at Project Acon, a little bit of advice on how to go about doing it. But first, because we are a cosplay podcast, of course, we must talk about cosplay. And so we shall have cosplay updates.
Cosplay updates. Woo.
And I think we're both holding on to what we're working on.
I know. I had to pull mine out from across the room. I was like, oh, it's like sitting on the other end of my table. Yay.
You've been making more shiny things, haven't you?
Yeah, I have lots of shiny things. So many shinies. And I'm making even more shinies that I'll be working on for this episode because you can never have enough shiny stars. Funny enough is that I was looking for lace earlier on Etsy, and I just happened to stumble across a store that had this really cool applique sequin lace mesh thing going on that was in green, the greens that I need for my freaking costume. And I was like, where was this a month ago when I was looking? Like, why is it on Etsy now? And of course, I bought myself a yard. I don't know if I'll use it, but I bought it. So yeah, this has been my life for pretty much the last 2 weeks is stars, and more stars with so much shiny that flash photographers are going to hate me. It's going to be funny. Super funny. The other thing that I have been working on is kind of sitting on my dress form. This is only just a small portion of it, but this is the White Mage armor from Final Fantasy XIV. This was supposed to be a surprise gift for a good friend of mine. She wanted me to make this for her a couple of years ago, but it was out of her price range. And I wanted to surprise her with this. And I got so much of it done that I got super, super excited and I wanted to show it to her. So I kind of ruined the surprise. It was my fault. So yeah, this thing is nearly done. I'm just doing some little touch-ups, some things that I didn't quite finish on the belt. And I'm actually, the reason I was looking for lace was for this costume. I'm going to be doing some little lace details along the red of the hood and then the red on the bottom of the skirt. So yeah, this came along really, really quickly. It was really nice, really easy. And I wanted to make this, well, one, because it's for my friend and I know she would love it. Secondly, I've been really wanting to make another one of these. I made one of these maybe about 2.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, as one of my first commission projects. And I was disappointed that the customer never sent me photos of her in the outfit. I was like, I spent all this time on it. I want to see this person wearing it. And she loves it. She still wears it. But she doesn't like getting her photo taken. So I'm like, okay, I need to make another one so I can have somebody else wear it so I can take photos of it. Like, it's like commissioner pride. Like, I want proof that I made this thing. So it's going to be done. And I didn't...
Portfolio pride.
Yeah, it's portfolio pride. I didn't want it for myself because I'm not a fan of the White Mage look. But it's a cute dress. It's a cute outfit. I want someone to wear it. So I know my friend will adore it. She's already squealing about it. I just need to do these little touch-ups, make her wig, and I'm set. And take lots of photos. The goal is photos. All right, your turn.
So I am still working on Irelia, and mostly it's because I was so lazy that I didn't feel like pulling out my sewing machine to actually be whipping through this as quickly as I probably should be. Plus, it doesn't help that I have another project on the table that I would have used for sewing, because I'm also building a screen door for my patio at the same time. And so I started hand sewing a lot of this and doing all of the detail. I'm doing catch stitching right now, or edge stitching. And I started doing it by hand in between league games. And I've kind of come to realize that hand sewing is very zen. And so I've just been sitting here hand sewing for about the last week on this costume. And when we have our cosplay group meet this weekend, I'm also going to bring it with me along with mending Pyrrha's skirt, which I'm going to do by hand. And then I need to break out my sewing machine after that, because we only have 2 months until Project Akon, and I have 2 full costumes that I would like to finish in that time. If I don't, no big deal. I have others I can take, but I would like to try and finish them in what time I do have, so I am going to have to pull out my sewing machine starting next week. Until then, I have Zen. It has really helped me de-stress. As far as not so personal cosplay news, this is more of cosplay in the news. I wanted to share with you guys that Firefly Path just posted on Facebook and said that at select Joanne stores, you can now get Simplicity Patterns Cosplay Magazine featuring cosplay patterns. So it looks like they actually have a cosplay magazine by Simplicity that has patterns. Apparently it also has coloring pages. Why, I don't know. Bonus projects and makeup tips. And it looks to be $4.99 retail. You may be able to get it cheaper than that because coupons are awesome. Limited time only, and it's only at select Joanne stores, so it may or may not be in the one near you. I thought that looked kind of interesting. They actually have a new pattern that is not in their book yet. And it's going to be an anime schoolgirl costume. The traditional school uniform. You know, pleated skirt, sailor collar type top, and everything. It looks good. I think it will be very helpful for a lot of very casual type projects. So I need to go dig in their catalog and figure out which pattern that is. Of course I'm going to pick it up.
Of course you are. You know, coloring is kind of the hot new hobby these days for both kids and adults. Yeah, coloring. You didn't know?
No.
Dude, go to Amazon. Go look at like their top 100 best-selling books, and most of them are going to be coloring books right now. Adult coloring books are the thing. Because it's like hand sewing. It's just meant to de-stress you. It zens you out. I mean, it's a good way to relax. Just 5 minutes coloring.
I mean, I'll run with it. I'm just trying to figure out like what spurred this sudden revolution in adult hobbyhood to be coloring books. Is it a retro thing?
Maybe it is, and I'm wondering if it's also because our age group is now hitting adulthood. Now that we have the excess cash to spend, we're the ones that are coming up with these ideas, and we're the ones selling them to our peers. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Very possible. I mean, I'm not criticizing it. I'm just surprised and confused. It's almost kind of like having arcade video games, like actual on an arcade, not emulators, like the box, having those make a comeback. And I know they just opened up the Video Games Museum in Frisco, and so that's kind of spurred a bit of a local comeback for video game parlors, because there are still some in the Metroplex, and some comic stores also have arcades. But it's not become a widespread thing like apparently coloring books have. And it's just not something that's been on my radar, because usually with that being kind of a geek culture thing, normally I hear about it from the major geek publications. It hasn't hit the wire yet.
You should probably take a look. The ones on Amazon are really funny because they have like ones for all the political stuff going on right now. So, you know, there's like Donald Trump coloring books.
There are Donald Trump chia kits.
Yeah. Does it make the hair do the wave?
It doesn't. I was kind of a little sad because, you know, the chia pets are normally green.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted them to sprout orange.
Oh.
So maybe like little marigolds or little Indian paintbrush or something.
That'd be fun.
Something that has, you know, a very distinct gold, like deep gold color. But no, you know, it's chia pet is still green.
A chia pet's still a chia pet. I mean,
yeah, I know. Speaking of another 80s icon.
It's all about the 80s.
I love the 80s.
I do love the 80s. I don't think I did this last time. Did I talk about the game museum?
You mentioned it as a preview because you hadn't done it yet.
Okay, yeah, because that was last weekend. The last weekend we were talking to the correspondents. Okay.
Right.
I guess, do we want to make that part of cosplay in the news, or do we want to stick it to the after session?
Let's do it as a quick update, since okay. I don't think it's too terribly extensive. In other words, it's not going to take up a chunk of the episode, so we can focus on paneling. So go ahead.
We're talking about the 80s right now, so that just seemed very appropriate.
I did mention it for a reason.
Yes, you did. Oh, goodness. So as I mentioned in the last episode, I went to the opening of the National Video Game Museum in Frisco. Video game is one word there for some odd reason, which annoys the crud out of me. I went there because I was acting as a reporter for Gawker Media, so you'll actually see my review on a couple of their websites. Cool stuff. But I also was asked to be a cosplay volunteer, which means I showed up in costume, I helped greet people in line, entertain the kids, I got a chance to walk around and see the backstage of the museum. I actually got to meet some of the guys who developed Activision, because they were there to celebrate in the opening, so that was kind of cool. And overall, it was a really fun experience. I ended up going as Rosalina from Super Smash Brothers. There was another cosplayer there as Wario, so that was perfect. I was like, great. We were able to entertain the line for the entire morning with just the two of us. Didn't have any problems. It was like, thank goodness there's another Nintendo character. You saved my day. Woohoo! Then we got upstaged by Master Chief because it's Master Chief. Why would the kids not want to see Master Chief? But we still had fun. It was an enjoyable experience. A lot of people were like, you know, we're more cosplayers showing up. And really, it was just us, and all of us were asked to be volunteers at the museum. So it wasn't like there were any outside cosplayers there. It was just us. But it was still a great time. The museum itself, it's $12 for adults, $10 for kids who are 12 and under, or if you are military, senior citizen, or a teacher. For some reason, students are not included in that $10 price. I don't know why. That makes no sense. And it is very much retro museum. It is all about the 1970s and the 1980s. And the space itself is pretty small. I could say you could probably walk through the entire museum in about 30 minutes. But the focus on it is interactivity, of course, because it's video games. They expect you to come up, touch things, play things, and actually get involved in the consoles and all these games. So you can easily get lost in about 2 to 3 hours there, like no problem. So for me, I think that was the one thing I really appreciated about was how much it was open space, and they just wanted you to just be involved in every little bit of what was going on. And it was cool. It was very well laid out. The thing that I really loved the most was they commissioned a bunch of artists from around the country to do all the artwork on the walls. The artwork is spectacular. It's just got a little bit of all your favorite games from the 80s and 90s, and it's all intermingled together. And it was also a great way to save some space. So instead of having like five consoles out on the floor that talked about Dragon Lair, they just had this huge mural that was on one wall that led to the bathrooms that was all about Dragon Lair. And they actually had a little plaque there that talked about the game. And I was like, okay, that's really cool. It did the same thing with Duck Hunt, and they had some for Climber, and it was just really, really well done. And it just looks really beautiful too. So the layout is fantastic. I really love the little arcade room because the second you stepped into it, it smelled like you were in an arcade. And I was like, oh, childhood memories. Great. I don't miss this smell. So yeah, it's one of those things where if you really love the history of video games or you're really interested in learning about more, I would say it's worth the trip. Go down there. It's right off the tollway. If you're in the Dallas region, you could probably get there in 20 to 30 minutes. If you're outside of the area, it could probably take you a little bit longer, but it's not terrible. They have good parking. There's lots of restaurant choices around, so you can actually make a fun day out of it. But if you're not really into video games a whole lot, you're just there to placate your kids, you're probably going to get done in about 30 minutes and wonder what the heck is going on. My only major critique with them is their gift shop. Their gift shop was really focused on high-end collector's items, not like kitschy museum things that you typically see. And it's like, where are all the buttons and the t-shirts? Like the cheap things that we as gamers love the crap out of. Because they had plushies. Yeah, it was like, they had a couple of plushies, but a couple. Like, they didn't have like a giant treasure trove of plushies in there. And it's a small gift shop, I get it. But you could easily load it up with plushies and buttons and they would have sold out. Because there was actually an exhibit there that was an entire wall of pre-order bonuses. So it's like keychains, buttons, the plushies, like the whole nine yards of just the really chintzy stuff that's uber, uber cheap. We all flocked to that wall. We were all like, that's so cool. I wanted that. Oh, I have that keychain. So yeah, I think that's the one thing that I hope that they do in the future is add those little niche items because we would totally buy those up.
And just a reminder that it is a permanent museum. This is not a traveling exhibition. This is not a temporary thing. This
is home. It is home.
Yes. So that if you guys end up visiting the area for a convention, say QuakeCon, Project Acon, Anime Fest, what have you, you can actually make a trip up there and it will still be there.
Yeah, it's a cool little area too. It's in the Frisco Discovery Center, which I found out as we were walking through, also showcases art from kids and adults in the area, and their theme that month was nerd stuff. So like the walls were littered with Star Wars art pieces that you could actually buy. I was like, ah, this is so cool. So yeah, there you go. Pretty simple, to the point. It was fun. I will probably go back.
I expected you might.
Yeah. The funniest thing was actually watching the kids try to figure out how to use the old consoles, particularly the giant Pong screen and the ColecoVision in the 80s room that they had, because they thought everything was touchpad. Which I was just like, oh my goodness. You had to sit there and watch as the volunteer show them, no, you actually have to turn the knob. Because they thought it was like an iPod touchpad. It kind of looks like one. No, it's like, no, you got to actually turn the knob to make the paddle go up and down.
Kids of the old days, video games were very much different and they were very much physical.
It was incredibly physical. It was just really funny. I was like, oh, that's so cute. Oh, I feel old.
All right. Do you have anything else for cosplay in the news?
No. Do you?
Nope.
Cool. We can roll.
So we are going to go ahead. We actually have an outline for this so that we're really organized for you guys.
I know.
Go ahead and go through start to finish the planning, organization, creation, and presentation of a panel. So basically from birth until the end of it. So
from birth to death.
I don't want to call it death because it's not really the death of a panel. Especially
no, it really isn't, but it just sounds
funny. Forever. It's the internet. It lives forever. As long as you upload it somewhere.
Yeah, that's always the other part too. Is your panel actually being recorded to be uploaded?
Yes, and a lot of panels aren't.
Yeah.
All right. So first things first, you know you want to teach a panel.
Yay!
You want to
Congratulations.
Figure out what you want to teach about. So you have to pick a topic. And that can be about as difficult as picking your next cosplay sometimes.
It sounds like it would be so simple, but it really isn't. Especially when you have so much knowledge about certain geeky aspects. It's just like, what do I pick that I want to talk about? And still sound like an intelligent human being in the process.
Right. So, of course, you want to choose something that you know a little something about.
Mm-hmm.
So you obviously have to have at least a little bit of knowledge about the subject. You don't have to be an expert when you teach a panel, incidentally. If you learn something in the process of researching the panel, that's fine. But you do have to know a little something about the subject. You can't just BS your way through the panel. It doesn't work, and we've actually seen people try and do it. It does not work.
It never works. It never works, ever.
The audience knows if you don't know your stuff. It shows.
And it's the same thing with an improv panel, too. You have to know the basics of improv. You have to have done it a couple of times, even more than a couple of times. You actually have to understand what's going on. You can't just go up there and freeform the entire thing and expect the greatest panel ever to occur. It just doesn't work that way.
So pick something that you know a little something about. Pick something that you enjoy talking about. If you're going to teach a panel about a topic that you hate, if you hate Naruto, don't teach a panel on it. Because the point of a panel isn't to get up on a soapbox and rant. typically there are panels like that that are critique panels, but those are actually different. They're not ranty. They're critiques, and those are different. But you want to be able to pass on your passion to the audience and to enjoy your topic. You know, panels are fun. They're supposed to be enjoyable experiences. So speak about something that you are passionate about and that you're going to come out of the panel with a good feeling about your topic. You don't want to feel completely beaten and defeated, like, oh God, that sucked so hardcore because I didn't know anything and I hated my topic. So we have something that you know something about, something that you like, something that you can put a twist on. You want to go ahead and address that one?
Yeah. So, and I think this one kind of came about because we see so many repetitive content. Like, it's always cosplay 101. It's always, you know, the history of Naruto or whatever. You can take something that you really, really love to talk about and just kind of put a new spin or a new edge on it. Like, my thing recently has been talking about video game theory. And in my case, I give each one of them a little bit of something extra to it. So instead of talking about Final Fantasy, it's the mythos and mythology of Final Fantasy. Instead of talking about BioWare, it's the tropes and tribulations of BioWare. So I can take something that I already enjoy talking about and putting something else on top of it that makes it unique, that makes it stand out from the traditional BioWare fan panel. This is something that makes it its own entity.
And we're not saying that you can't teach a 101 panel. You certainly. We're simply saying that if you want your panel to stand out, that you're going to have to find a way to differentiate yourself. Because if you consider what the convention staff is looking at, the convention staff, of course, gets all the panel submissions in. And they have a committee that takes a look at the entries. And they decide as a committee what panels will get chosen and which ones get discarded. Well, for a lot of the 101 topics, you're going to have a lot of first-time panelists being, you know, having offered those as their submission. Cosplay 101, Wigs 101, Armor 101, Manga 101. And there's going to be 5 or 6 submissions of each one. So if you want to be that one out of 5 or 6, you need to stand out. And for you to stand out, you have to have something extra, something beyond just Cosplay 101. And that's what we're saying. You can still go for it. Just add a little pizzazz to it.
Make it shine. Use the spirit fingers.
All right. So you've got something you know, a little something about, something you like, some twist that's got a little bit of pizzazz to it. You got your topic. You want to teach a panel on this topic, and it's going to be awesome. All right.
So cool.
The next step in the process is you have to submit it. The convention actually has to choose you to teach the panel. Because otherwise, you know, you're going to go there and there's not going to be a room for you to teach in and an audience for you to teach to and all that good stuff. So you obviously have to basically petition the con and say, I'd like to teach this, Mother May I? And it's up to them whether they say yes or no. So there's a couple of things that are probably considered best practice for when you do your panel submission to a con. And I like that you wrote out here, write out all aspects beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to have a general idea, big box, of what you want to do with your panel, because the con is also going to want to know what you want to do with your panel.
Exactly.
You can't just say, I want to teach on this topic. Okay. The con's going to ask you, how long are you going to take? What sort of supplies do you need? What sort of audience is this geared towards? Is there any cost associated with it? Do you have any special needs? Like, do you need additional electric outlets? Do you need technology in the form of projectors and whatnot? Do you have any special requirements for this panel? Like, is if it's cosplay chess, do you need a large area that you can tape out into squares? They're going to want to know all of those things. And some cons are actually also asking you to write a summary, which they put into their program book, so that people know what the heck the panel is about. So you have all of these, you know, very general box ideas that you need to have kind of a general feel for, maybe not specifics yet, but before you submit, you need to kind of have an idea of what you want to do, because you're going to have to write all that out. And you're going to have to definitely write it out when you submit it. So you may as well write it out on paper first.
And I find that in doing that, you also figure out, okay, do I really want to teach this panel? Because maybe as you're writing up your summary, you realize you don't know everything about the topic, and maybe this isn't your strong point. Maybe I should move to something else that I'm much more well-versed about. So sometimes, I mean, and that's happened to me before. I start typing out the summary and I realize maybe I shouldn't talk about this. I should probably study up a bit more, move to another topic. So it's a good way to kind of get your thoughts straight and realize, okay, how is this going to work? Can I make this happen? Am I going to be good enough for this? And then you can continue from there.
And there's kind of a general order to this outline as well. There's a process of events that kind of logically flows as you go through and write what you need out for your panel. So the very first thing that you want to write down, because this is going to be kind of your overarching guideline, is what is your goal? Basically, what do you want to achieve with your panel? What do you want people to walk out with? What do you hope to accomplish with your panel? What's the point? That is going to be your overarching guideline for everything else in your panel, because everything else has to point toward that goal. You want to achieve that thing. You want the pinnacle.
You want the top of the triangle.
Yes, you want the top of the triangle, not the bottom of the triangle. You want to go uphill.
Not downhill. We want up. We want up. Yes. Nice.
Okay. So the very first thing you want is the goal. And from that goal, you'll probably be able to figure out a title, because your panel has to have some sort of title. They're going to want to put that in their program book, their guidebook app, whatever they use for the con. And it also has to be on your submission form. So you know what you want to achieve. You've got a title for your panel. Now comes the fun part. This is like writing an outline for your essay in middle school.
It really is. It's like all those years in middle school and high school are coming back into play when you're going to a nerdy con to host a panel.
Yep. Because the next thing that you do is you have to break apart that goal and figure out how you're going to get there. So you need to start writing out letters or numbers or bullet points, however you want to divide it up. And it doesn't have to be that detailed yet. You can have very general overarching points, but you want to have a very logical path of going from A to B. If you don't have a logical path from A to B, and this is where so many panels fail to achieve their goal, is that they don't have that clarity, that logic, and the audience just gets lost. The panelists will end up just jumping around from topic to topic, and you're just sitting there going, squirrel! The audience isn't with you anymore. You've lost their attention, because almost everybody knows that attention spans for human beings, no matter their age, is very short. So you have to keep that in mind, that you're always going to have to, I don't want to say fight, because fight isn't the right word, but compete for the audience's attention with everything else distracting around them, and the digital device that they have in their hand is number one that you are competing against. So you have to be more entertaining than the phone. And that can be a little difficult to do. This is why you kind of have to plot out your strategy, how you want to do it. And if you can't think of how to get there, you can always ask friends. You can ask other panelists who have done it. Submit it for peer review. Say, hey, can you take a look at this? Can you give me some ideas? Or here are my ideas. What do you think? Can you give me some constructive feedback? You can always ask for help, guys. I mean, heck, we can offer help if nobody else can. We're always happy to help out.
That actually leads really well into the next bullet point that we have, which is practice, practice, and practice some more. Because part of practicing is not just you talking to yourself and making sure you understand everything. Practice it in front of your friends, in front of your family, in front of your peers. So that way they can see how the panel flows. And if they determine that something is not working right, or they feel like point A to point B doesn't make sense, they can tell you, you can fix it. And you know that when it comes to final panel time, everything will be running smoothly.
I've known for a full month before the con at night when I'm, lying down, getting ready to go to bed, I will talk to myself and I will talk through my panel points, not the whole panel every night, but I'll just pick one point and without looking at anything, I'll just start talking stream of consciousness and see if I can kind of get from A to B and have it make sense. Because that way I know where my obstacles are, where my stopping points are, where I get stuck. It's like, okay, I mentally flag that. It's like, okay, I got to work on that tomorrow. Okay, that went really well. I should keep that in mind and use it. And you can always record yourself. And yeah, we don't like listening to ourselves. But sometimes it helps because once you sleep, you're not going to remember it in the morning. So you can either jot it down if you want to keep just a little notebook, a little small notebook next to your bed, and just a pen. Just scribble down real quick whatever comes to your mind. If you don't want to audio record yourself, because of course there's always that phone, you can always record yourself that way. But you basically want to visualize mentally and with voice exactly how you're going to do this. And this is something that we also have issues with when people do stage competition. There's a certain amount of time you have to fill. You don't want to rush through it. It's like walking across the stage in stage competition. You have 30 seconds. Use all 30 seconds and just relax, chill. Stand there for, 9 to 10 seconds, let them take your picture and then move on. Same thing for a panel. You don't want to be talking so fast they can't understand you, even though you're going to be nervous. We get it. It's cool. Chill. You got this.
You got this.
Sometimes you just got to mentally tell yourself, you got this. And you have to hold yourself back just a little bit and have that kind of relaxed, confident demeanor as you're talking so that you're moving along at a good pace. You got to keep the audience's attention, toss a couple of jokes every so often, engage audience members, and move your panel through its paces in your time allotted. It's okay if you don't use up all of it, but if you have an hour-long panel and you only use up 15 minutes, the audience, unless you have a fan-freaking-tastic panel, the audience isn't going to walk out of that 15 minutes going, wow, I really learned something. The first thing on their mind is going to be, wow, that was short. Great. What do I do now? Now I have 45 minutes to fill. And you don't want that to be the last thing that they think of. So you're given an amount of time. Use it. And use it to the fullest extent that you can. And you can always, again, ask others to help you fill in that space, with research, with jokes, with PowerPoint slides, what have you. There are other things you can always do.
And part of the wonderful thing about practicing is if you do get to that point where you are nervous and you're feeling like you're going to forget everything, if you practice so much at home and in front of your friends and family, it's just going to come out second nature for you. It's going to flow so easy and smoothly that you're going to be like, oh, I just did my panel in an hour. What the heck happened? It's because you practice your butt off. That helps in so many situations. You have no idea.
In some ways, it's better to run out of time than it is to run way short of time. And plus, staff don't like that either, because then it makes the audience restless, and you never like restless attendees at a con. It's not good for business. And cons, let's face it, cons are a business. All right, so you've got your panel topic, you've got your title, you've got your basic outline, you've walked yourself through it, let's say a few times, you've gotten feedback on it. All right, so you basically have an idea of your framework. You know what you're going to do. Now you have to figure out how you're going to do it. How do you want to present this to the audience? And one of the first things you're going to have to think about is technology. And potentially the lack of it, depending on the con.
Yeah.
Because when you do the submission, you have to understand that the convention only has so much space in wherever they're holding their convention, in a hotel or what have you. Not all rooms are going to be capable of the technology that you may want. So So you may not have the option of a projector. You may not have the option of having a computer. You may not have the option of having audio. You may have to stand there and talk for an hour. Sometimes that's life. So you kind of have to prepare with that in mind. Ask for what you think you need, but prepare as if you won't have it. So that said, because Murphy's Law.
Murphy. Thanks, Murphy.
Yes. One thing that myself, as I have a teacher background, one thing that I try and consider is Gardner's 9 intelligences. And if you don't know what that is, Google it, obviously. But basically, it's a way of describing the 9 ways that people learn. You know, if you learn best by hearing things, if you learn best by seeing things, touching things, etc. And you need to consider that not everybody in your room is going to learn the same way. So if you stand there in a panel room talking for an hour, the people who are visual learners are going to basically tune you out. The people who are kinesthetic, touchy-touchy, they're going to tune you out. The people who learn best with music, likewise, unless you have a really awesome musical accent in your voice, then they might listen to you. I actually did that in college during one of my music classes. The dude had a gorgeous, lilting Irish accent. Oh, I loved listening to that guy. He was so cool.
There you go. That's all you need. You need a very nice foreign accent, preferably British, French, or Australian.
It has to be musical because his voice had tone to it. It was great. It's the best thing to listen to at 8 a.m. in the morning, man. It's the only way I could have lived through that class. So I say that with all of the loving in the world. Some people just have really great to listen to accents. But even then, I mean, most of us don't do that. So you have to consider that when you're teaching your panel is, if you can, you don't have to include all 9, but try and include at least 3. 3 different ways that people can experience your panel. Even if it's just playing background music when people come in and when they leave. That's fine. That counts. You can have a couple of visuals. Maybe you can just put a couple pieces of paper on a poster board. You can do a projected presentation. You can have handouts that you hand to the audience, which also counts as kinesthetic. If you want to do more kinesthetic, you can have little demo pieces that you hand out to the audience so that they can manipulate it. Now, when they do that, they're going to stop paying attention to you for a couple of minutes, but that's just how they learn. So you're doing it right. They're just experiencing it in the best way that they know how. And they'll walk away from it with a stronger experience that way, because you are talking their language. And that's something that as a good panelist, you need to try and do, is speak your audience's language so that they will form, I don't want to say a bond with you, but that's basically what you do in a panel, is you form that bond with people so that you get something out of that exchange. You learn something, they learn something, everybody's happy. So that's something to consider. And you get to talk about the technology and being the crux of your panel.
Oh my goodness, yes. So I actually labeled this bullet point subset, how to use PowerPoint with Val. Because one of my biggest pet peeves on top of lateness is people not knowing how to properly utilize PowerPoint, because everybody was taught wrong in middle school and high school on how to use this wonderful tool.
Do tell.
Okay, so first things first is that it's great to use technology in your panel. Love it. Fantastic. If you want to play video, you want to play music, if the convention has the space and the ability to do so, awesome. Go for it. I totally promote it and support it. Just remember not to abuse it and treat it like the wonderful tool that it is, specifically with PowerPoint. A lot of people like to use PowerPoint in their presentations. It's a great way to kind of give a glossary overview of what you're talking about, have pretty pictures in the background, whatever the case may be. The problem is that people like to overuse PowerPoint in all the wrong ways. Mostly it's like a copy paste of exactly what their presentation is. Like they'll type out word for word exactly what they're going to say, stick it in their PowerPoint,
and then read from the slides.
Read from the PowerPoint. No. Please, please, for the love of all that is holy, do not do this. The people are there to listen to you, to see you, to watch you interact with them. They are not there to be read at. If it was just a reading session, you could have just uploaded your PowerPoint online and they could have done it themselves. What's the point of them even having to go to the panel? It disrupts the entire purpose of the freaking panel, so please don't do it. It's just one of those things where it's like, PowerPoint is meant to be a supporting tool. It is meant there to assist you in your presentation. It is not the presentation itself. I think that's the big thing that you can take away from this. It's your assistant. It is not your presentation. Utilize it as an assistant.
And you can still read to an extent from your slides if, say, you're using them as an outline. So you can, you know, read the header on the slide and then turn to your audience and start speaking on that topic. And then you can go and say, okay, next we're going to talk about X. Turn back to your audience and engage. Because like you say, it's a tool. You can use it to help you, but it's not a crutch. Don't hobble around dependent on it. Because, and I wanted to mention this,
Murphy,
technology fails.
Technology will fail. At least once.
It will fail, it will fail at the worst possible time. Uh-huh. I mean, it failed on us during AllCon's cosplay contest. The projector froze and I had to reboot it. And it took me a few minutes to figure that out, and the audience was already getting antsy. So that said, you need to assume that something's going to fail. Plan as if it will. What are you going to do? What do you do? Assume, you know, if your PowerPoint presentation is meant to add flavor to your panel, assume that your PowerPoint fails. Assume that it won't load. It's corrupted when you try and open it. Your laptop fritzes. You know, maybe you shock your motherboard. There are no outlets in the room and you've only got so much battery power on your laptop, which is taken up even further by a projector. You don't have the right kind of cable or port for the projector. What have you? What will you do? Can you teach your panel without a PowerPoint? And this is why we say don't use it as a crutch. Because if that crutch falls, can you still walk? Can you? You better, because otherwise you're going to have that 15-minute panel, you're going to get nervous, and people are going to walk out. And that's not what you want. And we're not saying this to scare you. We're saying this to give you a heads up so that you can plan. And we've had tech fail in our panels before. It has happened.
It happened to me in my very first panel I have ever taught. The sound was not working at all. And I was so miffed, but I had pre-planned on that happening. So I was able to actually extend the portion of my panel that was going to be with video to talk about something else that related to the video without actually having to show it. So yeah, that was fun. I was like, oh good, my very first panel ever. And there's tech problems. Sweet. I'm on cloud nine.
And you can only spend so long troubleshooting those problems before, again, you lose the audience. If you spend the rest of your panel frantically trying to troubleshoot something that went wrong, you've already lost them.
People are going to start walking out, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're basically going to turn to their electronic devices, their internet, and they're going to entertain themselves. So I would say that if you can't get it going in the first 5 minutes of your panel, you need to start talking. You need to know your material that well. And things may break during your panel. If you have little demo pieces, assume that the audience is going to break them. Because there may be little kids in the audience that don't know any better. Or there may just be accidents, because accidents happen. I was sitting in a panel and I had laid my Athena staff down on the floor so that it wasn't in the way, so that people weren't going to be obstructed by it when they're trying to move around me, because the thing is 7 feet tall. So like, okay, lay it down nice and safe. Hell mel up the aisle and he stepped straight on the head, full weight, cracked it. Complete accident. Little boy didn't know any better. Mother came and apologized. But my prop was broken completely. I had to go home and completely remake it. So, you know, things happen. You just kind of have to plan for that. So don't take anything in there that you wouldn't mind losing, for one, as far as props and demos go. And don't go in there thinking that your PowerPoint presentation is the end-all be-all of your panel. So just plan for that. And that's why, again, having those multiple types of learning tools can help you, because you can fall back as backups. It helps.
It always, always, always helps. Yay, Murphy. Thanks, Murphy. You suck.
All right. So we're kind of building this up very slowly, as you see. So you've got...
It's a process. It is a process. That's why I'm like the people who are like, I could do this like in a month. I'm like, how? There's so much you have to do.
You can if that's all you're doing.
Yeah. If that's all you're focused on, sure. If you've got costumes to build in the process, probably not.
Or, you know, a regular job too. Sometimes that can get in the way.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got your topic that you want to teach on. You've got your title. Got your summary, got your outline, you've got your technology and or presentation aids put together. So basically you've got everything that you need to present that panel. You're ready. Now, of course, that's not the end.
No, of course not. It never is.
Now you need to polish it. This is where you take out your 1,000 grit sandpaper and start sanding. And then you move up to your 2000 grit and you keep going until that thing shines like a freaking vampire.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I need to find a twinkle sound effect just for that.
I'm sure you can. I have faith in you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So to make a panel shine, this is where you start getting the difference between those who have done public speaking before and are fairly confident at it, and those who, whether intended or not, let their anxiety get the best of them. You have to own that room. You have to move about that room like it is your property. You have to freaking shine like you are the complete world expert on this topic. You know everything about it. There is no question from that audience that can faze you. You don't actually have to be this person, but you have to act like that person if you really want that panel to go off well. And you have to take that charisma, which is all that this is. This is basically BSing 101 with extra charisma plus 3. You have to start that panel off with a bang. You want to grab their attention, and you can do that any number of ways. You can crack a joke. You can show off a really awesome demo. You can put up a surprising fact if you're doing an academic type panel. Or you can do some sort of experiment in front of them that basically makes them go, ooh. You have to somehow grab them. You have to, you know, shock them, scare them. If it's a horror panel, you have to impress them. You have to appeal to their curiosity, something that overrides that entertainment device in their hand. And then you've got about minutes to hold them. So you've got their attention. You start it, and you start it well. Okay. So we're rolling up that hill because you want to hit the pinnacle at the end of your panel. Well, that means you've got to keep going uphill. And to do that, every so often, you have to do those things that keep them engaged. You can't make your panel too passive, because they can just go on YouTube and watch any number of presentations. Well, they came to hear you. You have to prove why they came here is a good idea. And so, you know, we have different ways of doing that. I crack jokes constantly. And I tell stories, funny little stories that aren't too personal. Because that's one thing that you have to be careful of in panels, is you don't want to get too personal, not to the point of TMI, the point of this panel is about you, you're so vain. You kind of have to make this about your topic. You just happen to be the person speaking on it. And you happen to have knowledge you would like to share. It's not about you. I don't think a panel that's solely about you is going to get through the panel submission process. I'm sorry. Unless you're one of the invited guests at the convention, in which case you generally don't have to go through the submission process anyway.
I was about to say, that's probably the only exception to the rule is if you are a guest of the convention and you want to do a Q&A panel, they can pretty much say, okay, you can do that. And that's about it.
That's different.
Yeah, that's about it.
Pretty much anybody else, you have to make it about your topic.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sacrifice of yourself. So you can tell little personal things, but this is not a panel about your life story. It's also not really a panel to argue during. You can have civil debate because there are panels where it's constructive critique. Debate is perfectly fine in those panels. There's a very fine line, but it's a very bright line between argument and debate. And you really need to be careful to try and not cross that line. And that is our advice. We're not saying you can't. You just probably shouldn't. That's not the way you want to grab their attention because it tends to be very antagonistic. And people don't walk out of antagonistic panels very well. They will be salty, to use a gamer's term. And you don't want them to walk out salty. You want them to enjoy themselves. I mean, just like you need to enjoy yourself. I see the bullet point that says, don't summarize every bit of info about your topic.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you tend to address this, especially in your mythology panel.
I definitely do, because here's how I look at a panel. People are there because they already know a little bit of something about it, or even they just know the basics, like the overview of stuff, and they want to learn more. That's why they're there. That's why they want to get into said subject. They don't need to know a summary about every little bullet point that you've got. They are there because they want to know the details. That's why you're there to present. So you can do a general summary of like, here's what we're going to cover in this panel, but move on from there. Don't summarize every single topic that you have in the presentation. Give them details. People are there to learn. People are there to study. So give them the details that they want.
And also bear in mind that people can always Google the summaries. If they want to know about your topic, that's why we have search engines. But search engines don't generally give the details. Wikipedia does not have details. You want to give them the things that they can't just look up on their phone. And that's kind of the point. We're not saying every single thing, you know, this magical thing that you can't find on the internet anywhere. No, no. You can summarize a little bit. I mean, take everything that we're giving you with a handful of salt. Not so, just a little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah.
But salt is pretty good.
A few grains, because everybody needs a little bit of, you know, sodium and iodine. Anyways, give them an overall view, but also take that overall view and dig down in a few key points. And that's what you achieve when you first write your outline. Because when you first write it, you listed those key points. I hope you wrote them down. You listed what you're going to talk about. And those are the things you want to draw. And if you don't completely know about them well enough to be able to speak on them readily, do some research. Nobody says that you can't research your topic. We want you to research your topic. Yes, please use the internet. Please experiment. Please ask other experts. Talk to other people who are in that field of knowledge and have them help. Yes. Do your research. We want you to know about your topic. And then we want you to be able to present on that topic well enough that we can tell that you did your research, that you're not just memorizing something out of Wikipedia. So I hope that made sense.
It does. It's basically, don't overgeneralize everything that you're doing. Give us the details. That's what we're here for. We want details.
And we've actually, to a point, already covered including audience participation.
Yep.
And that's with the whole different types of learning things. You can do Q&A, which doesn't necessarily have to be Q&A solely on your topic. I mean, if you're doing a trivia type panel, you can do a Q&A that way. Or if you have, say, a video clip of an expert in your field doing something really cool, say, hey, there's this 3-minute clip. I'd like you guys to watch this because I think you can learn something from it. Do that. If you want to take the last 15 minutes of your panel and have a table out with all of your pieces of armor or your props, and you say, hey, if you guys want to come up and look at this and ask me questions, then please do. That's another way you can interact. So many different things. And don't be afraid to experiment. You can always try different. You don't have to always do the tried and true. You can try different things from what other people have done in panels. Sometimes it can be very effective. If you're nervous and this is your first time, you may want to stick with the tried and true. Just at least until you've done your first panel and you kind of have an idea of what it's like to present. Then you can go on and improve and experiment and try different things for presenting. Confidence is key.
Yes. Very important.
You have to be a master bullcrapper. And even if you think you're not good at it, you have to make the audience believe that you are the best at it. You have to really put on that, you know, charisma hat, that charismatic hat. For some reason, I just had this image of Mario's raccoon hat when I did that. I don't know.
It's a Tanuki hat. Yeah, basically, you have to transform yourself into Tanuki.
Yes.
And BS your way through your panel so people think that you are the expert at so much of this stuff, even if you're not. That's not to say that you should lie about information. And you could tell if somebody asks you a question and you don't know the answer, you can say, I do not know, but I'm totally going to Google that later and find out the answer. It's just a matter of how you present your panel. If you are confident in what you are talking about, people will listen. People will engage. And people will be interested. I mean, and that's really the bottom line, is you want the audience to be interested in what you are talking about. And if you're not confident in your abilities, if you're saying, I'm sorry, every 5 minutes, or if you're saying that you have this thought process that makes it difficult for you to teach a panel, they're going to immediately tune out. It doesn't matter how knowledgeable you are in the subject. If you cannot project that confidence, audience is no longer there. Audience has already went back to their phones. They're doing something else.
And I wanted to briefly address one thing that I know there are people in the audience thinking when they're watching this, because we had the same thoughts at some point ourselves. We know that you aren't all extroverts. We know that many of you consider yourself very heavy introverts. We know. We're both pretty heavy introverts too. But you probably couldn't ever tell that by watching us on stage or watching our show. And that's because we know that we're introverts, but we're not going to let that get in our way of projecting that extreme confidence and improvability that you need to be an effective public presenter. You can still be an introvert and act like an extrovert. It takes a lot of extra effort to really make that come across, and that's only going to come across with practice, guys. It's not something that you're going to do overnight. You're going to fail the first few times. You're going to feel awkward. You're going to feel weird. You're going to feel like, I'm not doing it right. Something's not wrong. I feel terrible. Yes, we get that. We've been there. And we're also here to tell you it gets better. And I don't say that very tongue-in-cheek. I'm saying this very seriously. You have to practice. You have to put yourself out there. You have to put that hat on that you are pretending to be an extrovert. And you just kind of have to take that introvert core of yourself and just lock it away in a room and give it a little Nintendo DS to play with for about an hour while you sit there and give the panel presentation of your life. And then when you're done, you can let them back out of the room and feed them. That's all there is to it. That's what you have to do when you do these things. And see, I'm making some people laugh when I say that. And that's kind of the point why I crack these jokes. Is because you think I'm being very fun, blow-offish about this whole thing, but I promise you will remember what I said, and the visual will stay with you. It's very strong. That's the point. You can do it. You just have to believe that you can and take the steps to make sure that you can.
Gotta believe!
Believe it!
I wasn't going there. I was going Parappa the Rapper, because we are not doing Naruto on this. No way.
Silver platter, ma'am. You handed that to me, covered on a
You
plate.
Started it. You said it first.
Uh-huh. And I finished it, too.
You finished it and you put a hat on it. I just like the idea of, like, little introverted me sitting somewhere with a Nintendo DS, and I wish that were true because then I get more street passes done.
Hey, if as a speaker, if you want to be mentally street passing with all the other people in the audience, you go right ahead and you do that.
I need to do that next time. I just need to put my DS out on the table while I'm giving my presentation and just have Street Pass going on at the same time.
If you need that visual, then that's perfectly fine. Whatever it takes to give people that confidence. I mean, if you have to sit there and mentally pretend that you're playing DS somewhere, that's perfectly cool. Public speakers use visualizations all the time. It's a psychological thing, and you have to beat yourself at your own psychological game. If you guys haven't studied gaming theory, it's very complex, but it can be very interesting too to kind of get inside your head and figure out that whole competitive mentality and that whole public persona kind of thing. Practice, practice, practice. That's
Practice
really
helps.
the end of it. And you've done your panel at this point. You've given the panel of your life. You had a great time doing it. You see that the audience is all smiles. Maybe there were even people taking notes in your panel. I've had people literally scribbling down in spirals during some of my panels. They were actually writing down what I said, which felt really weird at the time, but it's like, cool, okay, move on. You can't dwell on it. So once you've succeeded in giving your panel, you're not quite done. You're almost at the pinnacle. You're so close.
You can almost have your cookie.
You can almost have the cookie that is at the top. This is the point where you have like 4 hours remain. Then you have to worry about self-critique, and this is the hardest part. This is the part where you're going to feel terrible about yourself. But it's better that you feel terrible about yourself after the panel is over than before or during. So this part's okay. This is where you can be hard on yourself as long as it's for a constructive reason. This is where you make your paneling better. You don't have to go back and watch a recording of yourself. We're not going to sit there and, some people don't like watching themselves. You don't have to listen to yourself either. But you do need to mentally go back through that panel and how you ran through it, solicit feedback from the audience, and basically replay what you just did. And then think about ways that you can make it better. Could I have done more with my PowerPoint? Could I have made more demo pieces to hand out to the audience? Could I have talked more on a specific topic and maybe explained it better? Is there something I could have done to be more engaging when I started off that panel? Is there something that I can do to help with my nervousness? Is there some sort of visualization or prop? I mean, even if you're sitting there holding on to a stress ball, that's fine. Just ways that you can make yourself a better public speaker, because once you've paneled, do it again. Chances are very good that unless you've retired from panel speaking, you're going to do it again. So you have to look ahead to that next one and go, okay, I did good with this one. Here's how I can do awesome with the next one. Then you have hit your pinnacle. You can have your cookie.
Cookie. Woo.
Or whatever pastry, whatever delectable dessert that you feel like having at the pinnacle.
Usually for me, it's like, okay, I gotta go put my laptop off and go move on to the next activity because I just don't have time to rest.
Right. And usually after a panel is done, you'll end up having things that you need to put up. Obviously, you need to put up your laptop if you have one, put up your panel equipment. Clean up the room, make sure all the chairs are put back in place. Generally, staff can help with that, but as a good steward, you need to make sure that the room is nice when you leave it and not trashed. You will probably have audience members come up to you and want to talk to you. Generally, I would say 99% of the time, it is not to say that you suck. So don't be afraid when people come up to you. They're not coming to beat you down. Normally, they're either coming to ask you a question about the topic because they're curious, which is good. It means you piqued their curiosity and they want to know more. Or they're coming to give you kudos. So please do have time at the end of your panel, even if it's just 5 minutes, for audience interaction with you so that they can ask those questions. They can give you the feedback. Sometimes they'll even tell you how to improve and say, you know, I really wish you would have had a list of resources on your panel handout so that I'd know where to get the stuff when I'm done. Because you'll find that people do take panels, they come to learn. And they're willing to help you out because they want you to do it again. And that is the best feeling in the world. To have to you after a panel that you put your heart and soul into, you prepared the crap out of that. And then someone comes up to you afterward and they'll tell you, that was the best prepared panel I've ever attended in the entire time I've been going to conventions. I've literally had two people come up to me and say that I was the best panel they have ever been to. And I just sat there and went, yeah. I mean, I didn't say this out loud, but it was like, I feel pretty good. I went through all that practice that I went through to make sure that I knew my stuff, that I was prepared, that I engaged the audience, that I did everything that I could possibly do to make that panel great. And I succeeded, and they walked out with smiles on their faces. Best feeling. That's what you aim for.
Yeah, there's truly no better feeling than when someone comes up to you after a panel and say how much they love it, or even like 5 hours later that they find you at the convention center and say, hey, you hosted that panel. I really love that panel. Because that happened to me at ACON last year 5 times after my anime panel. And I was really contemplating on not submitting any panels this year because I was upset with the panel process. But it's because of those people that I'm bringing out new panels, because that was enough of inspiration for me to go, clearly these people are interested in these subjects I'm talking about. It would be a disservice to them if I didn't bring more content out. It's a cool ass feeling.
And sometimes you'll be lucky enough that they'll ask and they'll say, you know, I hope you come back next year because I would attend. And I'm sad. I'm very like genuinely sad to say that, unfortunately, even though I've had people tell me that they hope that I'm going to return, I've actually retired from panel teaching at cons. I will still teach if I'm a guest, but because for me personally, my preferred method to teach panels is to be very hands-on. I'm very focused on doing demos, like live demos in front of people where I will actually do to play with along with the presentation behind me as I'm talking. So it's very involved, but it also takes a lot of equipment. And every single year I've had to haul around a hand truck just to carry my panel equipment with me, because I take 2 or 3 boxes of equipment with me so that I can show it, because I'm very involved. And I just got sick of it. I don't want to have to carry a hand truck all around the convention constantly when I go and teach, even though everybody enjoys it. I think I could still do it on the show here and have it be nearly as enjoyable, just without the kinesthetic touchy-touchy, so that I don't have to haul around stuff at cons anymore. It's just too much of a hassle. So, you know, you won't see me teaching at cons anytime soon unless for some awesome reason I end up being invited as a guest. But other than that, you'll pretty much see me doing it here on the show.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that kind of told her to stop bringing the truckload of stuff every single year. You don't need all that stuff, Amber.
I do need it, though.
No, you don't.
When I teach my panels, I do, and the audience appreciated it.
You know,
they
I kid.
Got to go up and see that stuff and touchy-touchy.
You know, I kid.
I know.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, that is the long and short. The very long and the very short.
There's only one other thing I wanted to bring up that I think we miss. It's be aware of audience behavior. As you start doing more and more panels and you get accustomed to how audiences react to the way that you speak and the way that you teach, you kind of be able to pick up on this over time. The first time you do this, though, and you see people's eyes glaze over, you're probably freaking out and going, what do I do? What do I do? How do I get their attention? So just try to be aware that audiences do learn a little bit differently, as Amber said beforehand, And if they look like they're starting to get bored, it's probably a good time to start changing things up. Move on to your next topic point. Maybe you open up the floor to questions. Maybe you show a little video or something. So just kind of keep in mind how the audience is reacting to you in the presentation. And if you see that they're not paying attention as much as you would anticipate, change it up a little bit. That's really all that is. And there's this wonderful book, which the author, I never remember the name of, and the book is out of print, which makes it even worse because it was written in the early 90s. It's called Say It in Six. And I wish businesses adopted this practice. It means talk about your subject in 6 minutes or less because people can only retain 6 minutes worth of information. Anything beyond that, they're not going to care. They'll only remember the first 6 minutes of your presentation. So actually what I do with my panels is I try to hit my topic points and do it in 6 minute segments because I find it gives the audience enough opportunity to retain that first piece of information and learn so much more in the process. Doesn't mean I can't get overly detailed about certain things, which is fine. I'm cool with that. But they get more content out of my panel that way. And they're less likely to get bored. I very, very rarely see people leave my panel because of boredom or go to their phone because of boredom. It's because I'm changing up my topic points every 6 minutes to make sure it still keeps flowing and I'm still grooving.
I've held entire rooms in an armor panel for 2 hours. And had yes. very little attrition.
She
and,
has.
Yeah. I have witnesses to this. I can hold you for 2 hours because you have to be that dynamic. And practice. It really takes practice. I have been paneling for 6 years. And I started paneling at ACON to a very large room that was very intimidating.
I taught
Sewing 101 as my first panel. I actually taught 3 panels that year. I think every year I've done 3 panels consistently.
It's a 3-panel system, and it's always Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
It always is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which is really hard to do around the cosplay contest.
No kidding, right?
Quickly, I wanted to briefly mention, don't be too discouraged if your panel is rejected. Because we've gone through all of this as if your panel's been accepted. Don't take it personally if your panel happens to be rejected. Cons have different criteria on what they're going to accept. They have scheduling requirements that they have to meet, especially with room allotment, since they don't always have all the rooms for 24 hours. And you also have to deal with the fact that multiple panelists are going to have the same scheduling requests. They'll say, I don't want to teach during these hours, or I can only teach on these days. And you're going to have multiple people with that restriction, and the con can only do so much with their schedule grid. And they actually really do try to honor all of those requests. I'll give them a lot of credit for that. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. Or, you know, in the case of some, for example, some conventions are starting to ban character Q&As. And they have reasons, and they're good reasons for that. Not the least among them is that it can be very hard to control content when there are minors in the room. And that is something you need to worry about during your panel if your intended audience is below the age of 18. You need to censor some things per convention policy, because otherwise you have to have an 18 plus only panel and you have to start carding people. And those tend to be scheduled after 8 p.m. So that's, you know, don't take it too hard. Sometimes if you're polite and respectful, you can ask them why your panel was rejected. As long as you take that to be a learning experience and not a ranty experience. And that way you can take that information, learn from it, and then try again next year. Or try again at another con. Nothing stops you from teaching the same panels at multiple cons. You can take that and improve your panel from con to con and learn from it as you go. We've done that.
Yeah, I've definitely done that. Every single time I teach my cosplay runway panel, I do it a little bit differently, but I do take it to convention before I stop doing it.
So that is paneling 101.
Next time, paneling 102.
Well, in a sense, that kind of was a 201 because I've actually seen panels on how to panel.
Yeah, I have too.
And I think we were a little bit more detailed than that.
I think so too. And we did it in about in roughly 1 hour and 20 minutes. So that's actually not so bad. We could have taught that somewhere.
Well, we also had cosplay updates and everything else during that too. But
I was trying to
anyway,
accommodate for that,
I know. So for those of you watching during this live recording, if you guys have any questions, we will happily take questions. If you want to ask for advice on your particular panel, you guys are always welcome to send that to us. I can't promise immediate response just because life gets in the way sometimes. For those of you who weren't able to join us live, if you listen to the recording and you guys would like to contact us, you can contact us through any of our social media. If you want to send us the outline of your panel and ask for feedback, that's fine. We will do what we can to help. We'll probably get an answer from both of us individually, as always. And if you guys just have general commentary suggestions on the show, we always take that as well. Because, like panels, we always want to improve the show. And we're always trying to get better, so we always accept that too. With that, we will call a close to this episode 113 of CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. Thank you to our audience members for listening and downloading the show. Big thank you to our new listeners around the globe. Thank you guys so much for sharing our page. We ask that you please continue to do so. You can contact us on any of our social media, which you can see around the screen. Our email address is podcast@cospod.org. We will see you guys next episode in 114. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys!